This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Welcome to the Journal of Neurosurgery podcast for January 28th, 2011. I'm Natalie Pynchon. I will be reading a summary of some of the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery today. Topics covered in this podcast are hydrocephalus, oncology, and vascular disorders. Ventricle wall movements and cerebrospinal fluid flow in hydrocephalus, a clinical article by Richard Penn and colleagues. The dynamics of fluid flow in normal pressure hydrocephalus are poorly understood. Normally, cerebrospinal fluid flows out of the ventricles into the subarachnoid space, but in hydrocephalus, this anterograde flow is reversed. This major hydrodynamic change has been shown by CINI MR imaging studies in the past, and in this study, the authors provide additional clinical data obtained in patients with normal pressure hydrocephalus. They supplement these data with computer simulations to better understand the CSF flow and ventricular wall displacement, and they emphasize its clinical implications. The reversal of CSF flow is predicted by the author's fluid dynamic model, in which the only change that creates hydrocephalus is increased resistance to CSF outflow. Interestingly, successful shunting returns the flow of CSF to the normal pattern, even though the shunt removes fluid from the ventricle, and this is predicted by the model. The authors also found that ventricular wall movement changes very little when hydrocephalus occurs, even though compliance of the brain compartment is compromised and the CSF pulse pressure is increased. This means that treating the increased pulse pressure alone would not be expected to reverse hydrocephalus. Removing the cause of obstruction to CSF flow or draining the accumulating CSF by shunting are the only ways to improve hydrocephalus. The authors conclude that quantitating the direction of CSF flow may provide a useful way to detect hydrocephalus, as well as a way to monitor the response to shunting. Delayed postoperative hemorrhage in 21 patients with intracranial epidermoid cysts. A clinical article by Hiao Hui Ren and co-authors. Intracranial epidermoid cysts are rare, potentially curable, benign lesions that are sometimes associated with severe postoperative complications, including hemorrhage. Delayed hemorrhage, defined as one that occurred after an initial unremarkable postoperative CT scan, contributes to most cases of postoperative hemorrhage in patients with epidermoid cyst. In this study, the authors focus on delayed hemorrhage as one of the severe postoperative complications in epidermoid cyst, report its incidence and its clinical features, and they analyze related clinical parameters. Between 2002 and 2008, there were 428 cases of intracranial epidermoid cysts surgically treated in Beijing's Qiantan Hospital, and these were retrospectively reviewed by the authors. Among the 428 surgically treated epidermoid cysts, 24 were complicated with postoperative hemorrhage, including 21 with delayed onset. The incidence of delayed postoperative hemorrhage was 5%. The onset time ranged from the 5th to the 23rd day after the operation. Manifestation included signs of intracranial hypertension, meningeal irritation, brain herniation, seizures, and syncope. Radiological studies revealed hematoma in 11 cases and subarachnoid hemorrhage in 10 cases. The rehemorrhage rate was 38% and the mortality rate was 29%. To identify risk factors, clinical parameters were compared in patients with and without delayed hemorrhage, including the patient's age and sex, the chief surgeon's experience in neurosurgery, The year of the operation, tumour size, adhesion to neurovascular structures, and degree of removal. None of these parameters was correlated with this complication, in spite of a relatively lower probability value for adhesion to neurovascular structures. The authors conclude that delayed postoperative hemorrhage contributed to 87.5% of the postoperative hemorrhages in patients with intracranial epidermoid cyst, and that it was a unique postoperative complication with unfavorable outcomes. Adhesion to neurovascular structures was possibly related to this complication. Chronic spontaneous diploic hematoma, a case report by José Tortosa and co-workers. The authors document the first reported case of an intradiploic chronic spontaneous hematoma in a patient with skin stigmata of von Recklinghausen disease. To the author's knowledge, this case represents the first description of a diploic hematoma in a patient with stigmata of neurofibromatosis type 1, unrelated to head trauma. Plain skull radiography showed an osteolytic lesion with well-circumscribed margins corresponding to the hematoma, together with exuberant perilesional vascular markings. The patient exhibited abnormal cerebral venous drainage toward diploic vessels, with sluggish venous flow ectasia. This supported the hypothesis that this vascular abnormality could be held responsible for the hemorrhage. The authors hypothesize that the hematoma was formed by both an abnormal venous drainage toward the diploic vascular net, together with a vasculopathy that caused stenosis and obstruction of the normal drainage pathways from these vessels. Thank you for listening to the Journal of Neurosurgery. To listen to more of our podcasts, please visit us at thejns.org. You can also follow the JNS on Twitter.